Welcome to Optimal Health for Busy Entrepreneurs, the podcast for busy and high-performing entrepreneurs and leaders who are looking to create more energy and optimize their health while upgrading their brain and personal performance with precision. I am your host, Julian Hayes II. I've been involved with health and performance for over a decade. This podcast was created for the high performer who is unapologetically ambitious, the one who moves at a fast pace and operates with an edge, the one who wants to become superhuman. Nothing here is fluff, gimmicky, or feel good. I have little to no interest in simply helping you improve your life. I want to help transform it. By listening to this podcast, expect to have a body that feels just as good as it looks. Expect to possess a swagger and style that gives off an infectious vibe. Expect to command the stage or any boardroom you walk into with your executive presence. And lastly, expect to become your most enhanced self so you can live a limitless life. Now, let's get to the show. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Optimal Health for Busy Entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Julian Hayes II, back with another superhuman, another fascinating individual, an interesting company that you will be kind of just amazed by in some of the cool things that they're up to. And I'm speaking with Chris Bunka. He is the chairman and CEO of Lexaria Bioscience. He's a serial entrepreneur for, I believe, over three decades now, and he's a published author. He's an accomplished public speaker. He's a fairly busy guy. Just I can go through reading the accolades a lot, so I'm going to stop there and just welcome him to the show. Chris, how's it going?
It's great. Thank you for the very, very warm welcome, Julian. Great to be here.
Well, you made it easy because it seems like you never have a dull moment in your life. So. Yeah.
It's busy as a CEO. I tell you what, time is the one thing there's just never enough of.
Yeah. You know, as I do these interviews, and I think a lot of us aspire, if we're not there yet, to be the CEO, and we think of the good things that comes to be the CEO, yeah. But there's also a lot of responsibilities that sometimes probably isn't discussed as much that comes with being a CEO, that comes with growing a company, getting out in front of investors and everything. So I'm sure you know all about that.
Yeah, I tell you what, I've been doing it a long time. I've always had a kind of, even as, like I say, a bigger child, I was the kid who would, if I saw a red button, I'm going to push it. Mm-hmm. And maybe the red button is going to blow something up, or maybe it's going to start a machine or Lord knows what. I'm the kind of guy that I'm going to push that button and I'm going to learn by doing. So because of that, believe it or not, I had my first kind of operating business when I was 17. I left home when I was 17. By the time I was 21, maybe 20, 21, I was on my third business.
Oh, wow.
No big successes in there, but earned a living, found a way to earn a living. And I can tell you flat out, there's a lot of great things about working for yourself or being the fellow in charge, but it's not just the responsibility, it's the weight of it. And when you're in public company, executive ranks, as I have been the last, say, 15 years, 20 years, there are other expectations, and we're all familiar with it, Julian, right? CEOs, we don't have blood in our veins, we have ice water. We're supposed to be emotionless, we're supposed to be fact-based, we're supposed to only make these pragmatic decisions with, oh, by the way, perfect information. And really, the art of being a CEO is making perfect decisions with imperfect information. Mm. That's the task. And doing it in a way that you don't affect your marriage, your personal relationships and everything else, which is another way of saying it's pretty much impossible to get it just right.
So does that come just from wisdom? Is there any way for us not to accumulate a bunch of cuts and bruises along the way?
No. I don't think so. Is there any way to do it? Yeah, there probably is. And, you know, this kind of goes into that divide. You see this divide in managerial circles and entrepreneurial circles and others. And it's kind of this divide on the one side. Nowadays, you have all kinds of workshops and entities, groups that have been created that are supposed to teach you how to be entrepreneurial, how to launch your business, you know, all these different things, mentoring relationships and so on. And then, of course, in the academic world, we're all familiar with, because it's been around for hundreds of years, the idea that you get lots of formal training. And a lot of both of those kinds of concepts run around the idea that, well, the more that you learn in advance, facts, figures, processes, ways of managing people and so on, the more you know, the more you can take the art out of the practice of running a company. Now, on the other side, there's, you know, the people like me who kind of did it the old fashioned way, pushing buttons, you know, using a shovel, you know, using a pickaxe, and then every once in a while you uncover a rock and you have to figure what your way of digging around it. I think the book learning, I think the professional training is invaluable. It's not that you shouldn't do it. You need to do it, especially nowadays when specialization is such a big deal. But honestly, there's just no replacement for the cuts and bruises, the emotional trauma, the bad days, because I think everybody learns character and wisdom from those things. You might learn information and processes from the more formal stuff, but until you do it, I tell you what, there's just nothing like it. And I can think of in my career instances where I encountered something for the first time at the age of 23 or 28 or 32 that might have even brought me to tears, because I would have been so profoundly affected by the enormity of whatever it is that had just happened. When I encounter that same thing in my 50s, yeah, you know, I've been through it before. It didn't kill me then. I might not like it today, but it's not going to disrupt things so much. So yeah, I really do think, you know, and of course I'm biased because I have gray hair, but I think that combination of youth and vitality, idealism, energy, all of that combined with gray hair experience, that to me is probably the best package you can get.
Yeah, it sounds like, it reminds me of one of the conversations I had with a mentor last week. And I was talking about it, I guess, a perceived issue I had, and he just started laughing. He's like, I'm not laughing at you. Right. I'm laughing because at your age as well, I would thought that this feels like an impossible situation, or it's a highly stressful situation, but just trust me, this is nothing. Every entrepreneur who wants to build a company has went through these same stages. So just smile and keep going. And so,
yeah. And that is, I'm telling you, that is hugely important advice. Keep going, keep going. I remember when, you know, my kids were younger in their teen years, my wife and I would tell them, you know, look, guys, sometimes half of the battle is just showing up. You show up for your hockey practice, you show up for your sports teams, you show up for the exam. Are you perfectly prepared? Are you perfectly conditioned? Probably not. Maybe you are, but probably not. But you got to show up. Just show up, do your job, get through it, think about how to do it better the next time. But never, ever stop. It's not about how many times you get knocked down, right? It's about how many times you get up.
Yeah. And I'm curious, as we start to dive into Lexaria, I read in 2000, so you've been the CEO there since 2006, right?
2008.
Okay.
Long time.
Well, I mean, I can remember 2008. Time flies. Yeah. I was a completely different person in 2008.
Oof. Fair enough.
And I know that you had to do like a pivot of sorts there, right? And so I'm curious, just a decision-making, like the thought process on that. How'd you determine like we should do this pivot? Because a lot of times I'm thinking that, especially in the times like the last 18 to 20 months, a lot of businesses have had to pivot or maybe we should change up. Maybe we have to change up something. So how do you kind of know when to start making a pivot?
That's a great question. It's a complex group of factors, I think, that provide the answer. In our case, it was a combination of necessity, ethics, macroeconomic trends, and so on. So when I first came to Lexaria, I came to the company as I was a former large and currently and still am a large shareholder. I was a large shareholder of the company, but I wasn't involved in management. And it was an oil and gas company back then with assets in your part of the world, Julian, down in Mississippi, Oklahoma, that area. And, you know, it was trucking along. It was doing fine. It had positive cash flow. The company was doing okay. But a couple of big things started happening in the global environment. One was the then new idea of shale oil, and the industry and the investment banking community was moving very rapidly towards those and away from conventional oil and gas. So a company that had fundamental change in business conditions. At the same time, you saw the price of oil a couple of times between about 2008 and 2013 or so spike up towards, you know, the $100 range and then crash back down. So those things were really affecting our business. And we were out of favor with the investment banking community because we were conventional and the world was moving to shale. So the board of directors and I were looking at all these trends, trying to figure out, you know, can we make the company survive? How do we make it prosper? At the end of the day, we're supposed to be making money for our shareholders. And we realized it was going to get really, really challenging. So when natural gas prices spiked, I think it was 2009 or 10, we took advantage of that as an opportunity. We sold off some natural gas assets at the highest price we could. And then the oil assets about 3 or 4 years later. And we were looking at, you know, we paid off the bank lines, all the creditors, everybody was paid. So the company had, you know, a nice clean bill of health. And we had some money, and not a lot, but a couple million dollars. And we were looking at it saying, well, what do we do now? And it was a strange time. It was the beginning. It was this really exciting era for cannabis. And I wasn't a cannabis user at all. I actually had a business friend of mine come to visit me in my office, and he gave me a presentation on this new idea of investing in cannabis, and I threw him out of my office. Julian, I actually threw him out. And this was a 20-year friend, and we're still friends today. But I said to him, I said, you know, I've got teenagers at home. You want me to get into the cannabis industry? You've got to be out of your mind. But he was stubborn, and he made me look at it. I'm kind of objective. So we looked at the industry, long story short, looked at a lot of medical literature, and we realized there really are some profoundly beneficial aspects to that whole topic. So we started looking at the industry. When we were looking at the industry in the early days, 2014, it was early. I'm Canadian. The Canadian medical community came out with a position, and they said, look, this was the College of Physicians and Surgeons. And they said at the time, we are not going to recommend to our doctors that they prescribe medical cannabis for anybody under the age of 25. And the reason being is that in the human animal, especially males, our brains are usually not fully developed till around 23 to 25, females a year or two earlier. As all young men know, you're out of your league with women your own age. And this that's why.
Very true.
So when that came out, I wrote a white paper, and I published it, and I basically said, hey, you know, we're Lexaria, we're looking at getting into this industry, but we're going to work in harmony with the medical community. And if we get licensed and we go down the road, we are going to make a pledge that we're not going to sell cannabis to anybody under the age of 25. And I tell you what, Julian, that created a shitstorm. There's just no other way to say it. And I had the CEOs of the, you know, more well-known, bigger companies, cannabis companies, calling me the next day, and they were furious. And they were saying, you know, Bunka, have you lost your mind? Don't you know that half of our clients are under the age of 25? And I said, I do know it. But the medical community says there's a difference between using cannabis after brain development is complete or before it's complete. And I don't want to take a chance. We want to be on the safe side of it. So we stuck to our guns, and I got on the national media because of that. And as a result of that, so I know that's a long backstory, but that is how Lexaria became what it is today, because two PhD researchers in Florida, in their private lives, were investigating a way to deliver cannabinoids like CBD, cannabidiol, more effectively through oral means, something you put in your mouth. And they had come across, kind of invented a new technology. It was very early days, very rough around the edges, in fact. But because they saw me on TV, because of this ethical stance we took, they called me and basically offered their technology to me. And the way they opened the conversation, I'll never forget. I love the woman for what she said to me. She said, you know, Chris, from what we can see in the media, you seem to be the only ethical cannabis company that actually cares about your customers. And I said, well, I don't know if that's true or not. I'm sure it's not, but thank you. And yes, we do care. Anyways, that was the beginning of Dehydratech. And Dehydratech is the name we have since assigned to the technology. We acquired it from these two ladies, very early, early stages. It had one patent application at the time and had not been tested at all. We now have 21 granted patents all over the world, Japan, India, the European Union, America, and Australia. We have another 50 patents pending. We have run dozens, literally 2 to 3 dozen animal studies. We are on our third, we completed our third human clinical study this year. We're about to launch our fourth and fifth human clinical studies. And we've expanded the technology dramatically so that it now, yes, it delivers cannabinoids through oral means, but also oral nicotine, antiviral drugs. We're actually doing research with regards to COVID, estrogen, phosphodiesterase inhibitors, that's stuff like Viagra or Cialis. Our technology is good at taking difficult to deliver drugs, drugs that if you swallow them, over 90% of what you swallow ends up in the toilet. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fat soluble drugs that work like that. That's called bioavailability, and that's poor bioavailability. Our tech increases the bioavailability anywhere from about 100% to, believe it or not, as much as 1,000%. So we can take something that only delivers at, say, a 5% rate and maybe deliver it somewhere between 10 and 50%. So it's a dramatic improvement in the efficacy of these drugs. And they include cannabinoids, but all these other things that I've just mentioned. So that's the basis of how we got to where we got. And I'll share one last thing with you on that. There was another ethical consideration, and your entrepreneurial-based audience are going to face these issues. And that's why I'm bringing it up. You face them all the time. You know, the woman who called me and offered the technology, she offered it to Chris Bunka, the CEO of Lexaria Bioscience. So it really didn't fit into our company because we were just getting started. We had just gotten rid of the oil and gas. And really, if I had my druthers, I did spend almost 5 years in the venture capital industry. And if I had my druthers, I would have taken that technology and I would have put it into a brand new company. That would have been the smart way to build the company for the future. But there is a thing in law and in ethics called theft of a corporate opportunity. And when you, as a executive officer or member of a board of a company, private or public, are presented with an opportunity for that company, you're really not supposed to take that opportunity and put it into any other entity, even if it helps you personally, and it probably would help you personally. But that is called theft of a corporate opportunity. And because the tech was offered to Lexaria, we accepted it and we put it into Lexaria. But it meant that all the shareholders who maybe owned Lexaria because it was an oil and gas company, well, it probably meant that I was going to have a couple of really rough years as I watched them exit the company and try to find new shareholders to replace them. Because after all, they had not invested in a biotech company. They invested in oil and gas. So those sorts of considerations make the answer to a simple question that, and I know it's a long, long answer, but it makes it really complicated because there's a lot of different stuff that you have to consider as you go forward. We like to be ethical, honest, and upfront with people. Sometimes that means the road is a little rockier. And you just have to accept it as part of the deal of sticking to your guns.
No, that's a perfect answer because, you know, the whole premise of this show is the marriage of health and business. And, you know, I initially started out, you know, with the health world. So I talk about how the human body is very complex and you have all these, making one decision means that you're technically making a bunch of other decisions because they're all connected with each other. So it's the same thing in business, as you just pointed out. So, you know, and as I'm thinking about the DehydroTech, my first mind is like supplement companies would love you guys, right?
And some of them do. So vitamins, for example, vitamins and supplements in the world of, let's say, stuff you put in your mouth, you know, any type of food or beverage. There's lots of different ways to organize them or categorize them. But one way is to say they're either water soluble or they're fat soluble. And that is true. So alcohol is water soluble. That's why if you drink too much, your hangover is pretty much gone in 24, 36 hours. It's water soluble. It's flushed out of your system. If you use cannabis, you can be tested positive for THC weeks later, even if you only use it one time. That's because it's fat soluble. It enters your body a completely different way, and it stays in your body a completely different way. Our technology only works or primarily works with fat soluble. So in the vitamin world, vitamins A, D, E, and K, they're all fat soluble. You absorb them without technology really poorly. So if you take vitamin E in a capsule and you swallow it, chances are, you know, you're going to absorb 10 to 15% of whatever was in the capsule. The rest of it flushed down the toilet. If you take vitamin C, which is water soluble, chances are you're going to absorb 90% of what's in the capsule. So our technology works on fat soluble vitamins, supplements, hormones. As I say, we've done some amazing work this year, Julian. We're just dumbstruck with the success we had. We worked with a drug by the name of Remdesivir. Okay. And Remdesivir was the only drug approved by FDA for emergency use to treat against COVID. Mm-hmm. So we ran some tests and we discovered that we were able with our tech. So we take Remdesivir, we process it with our tech, and then we would give it to animals in an animal study. And we found that with our tech, 2 to 3 times more Remdesivir actually made it into the bloodstream. And that's always our goal. So, you know, like you say, I mean, the whole theme of your podcast is this idea that you're marrying business with health. Mm-hmm. And that is what, you know, Lexaria does. We are trying to improve human health in any number of ways by more effectively delivering these beneficial compounds, drugs, vitamins, cannabinoids, whatever the case may be.
Would this also help in terms of hospitals and clinicians giving out dosages of drugs, being able to be a little more precise with it? Because I know that sometimes, like, there's a standard amount that you give each patient, right?
Sure.
But then, you know, I do genetic testing with clients is one of the things I do. And we know that, like, for myself, I process alcohol, caffeine much slower due to certain genes I have, whereas others are more rapid metabolizers. So I'm thinking in the case here, with that work in synergy with that to help be a little more precise with dosages?
It absolutely can. And there's so many applications to this. I don't know if you know what a great intuitive question that is for Dehydratec. So here, I'll give you one example. Let's talk about ibuprofen or NSAIDs, non-steroidal mm-hmm. anti-inflammatories, ibuprofen, aspirin, et cetera. So we all know what that is. We all have them in our bathroom, in the cabinet, and you take it for inflammation or headaches or what have you. A lot of people know, most people know that those drugs, although they're generally fairly safe, they're not entirely safe. In fact, it was just this week, FDA came out and said, you know what, if you're over the age of 60, you should not be taking a mini aspirin every day. For the heart problems, but that mini aspirin per day is resulting in gut bleeding and other intestinal problems. Well, the truth is over 40,000 people a year in the United States die from taking NSAIDs. They can cause hemorrhaging and really, well, life-ending complications. So with Dehydratec, because we can deliver that drug more effectively, there's two sides to the coin. On the one side, we could make it more dangerous because we're actually getting more of it into the bloodstream. On the other hand, and this is where we tend to focus, because we deliver it more effectively, you could take half the dose or a third of the dose to end up with the same equivalent of quantity in bloodstream. But because you've only dosed at one third the level, all of those side effects, the side effect profile greatly reduces because you're not introducing so much drug into the human body for a tiny proportion of it to get where it needs to go. And that is a theme we hit over and over and over again. It's something that I have a criticism of the biotech or the pharmaceutical industry for, because you hear it all the time. You know, a biotech company or a pharmaceutical company comes up and they say, oh, we figured a way to get around your body's natural blah, blah, blah. We figured out a way to get through this or get over here. And what they're really saying is they're defeating the body's natural processes in order to be able to deliver a drug to a certain part of your body or what have you. And I'm not saying that there aren't times when that's a good thing. Sometimes that's the only way to deliver an effective drug regimen. But what I am saying is that's not what Lexaria does. Our technology works symbiotically with the natural processes of your body to actually just sort of turbocharge what your body would normally do. So with the Dehydratec, we add a long chain fatty acid and then a patented processing step. And we kind of glue the drug, let's say the aspirin, to the long chain fatty acids. We don't wrap it. We don't create a bubble and hide the aspirin. We crazy glue them together, if you will. And because of that, both sides of that larger molecule are recognized by your body. We're not trying to hide them. But because your intestinal wall recognizes the beneficial properties of the long chain fatty acid, those fatty acids are pulled across the intestinal wall. They do not go into the hepatic vein, into the liver for metabolization, as you were just mentioning. Mm-hmm. Instead, they go into the lymphatic lacteals and they distribute through your lymph nodes throughout the body within 2 minutes. So we are capable of putting something in your mouth, a capsule or what have you, you swallow it, and within 2 minutes, those drugs start to reach your bloodstream without being metabolized by the liver. So we avoid first pass liver metabolization, and the drug in an unaltered form is able to be distributed throughout your body with the opportunity of binding with the receptor cells it needs to bind with. And we haven't tricked your body to do anything it wouldn't normally do. We've just made it happen more effectively. So I think it's a much, generally speaking, a much safer route of administration of these fat-soluble molecules.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would 100% agree on that. And I kind of want to backtrack to the beginning of this year. I saw in a different interview of yours that you kind of said you had like a company rebirth. And that was with the getting on the NASDAQ, right?
Yeah. Holy smokes. What a process that was. Yeah.
So I'm just curious, what is the process like to get on NASDAQ?
It's hard. No denying it's hard. It's a lot of work. It should be hard. There's only two big national exchanges. Mm-hmm. So we were previously on the OTCQX, which is the highest of five rungs, if you will, or five categories on the OTC. And we've been there a long time, and it wasn't a bad place, but because it's not a recognized stock exchange, for example, almost all institutional investors are not allowed to participate on the OTC. So we wanted to increase the opportunity for people and institutions to own our stock. We also needed investment banking because our company's been really close to being broke for most of the last half dozen years. Now, that all changed in January in a big way. We raised $11 million in that uplist round. And we worked with one of the bigger investment bankers in New York, H.C. Wainwright. They're very well known. They've done something like, I don't know, $18 or $20 billion in corporate finance this year. And then we have to work with the law firms and everything else. So if people, if you're out there and you're listening to this and this is something that's on your bucket list, it's on your to-do list, yes, you can do it. It's a long checklist. There are hundreds of questions that will be posed, literally hundreds, 200 to 300 questions that you are expected to answer. You have to answer them correctly and honestly. You have to have good investment banking. You need good law firm. You need good legal representation. And you need a good team. Lexaria is not Chris Bunka. Chris Bunka is a part of Lexaria, but I have a great legal team, accounting and CFO. My science people are extraordinary. It is a team. So, you know, be prepared for, I don't know, I suppose you could get it done as quickly as maybe 4 months, but 4 to 7 months of work. It's a six-figure project, and you're going to need a lot of outside expertise, but it is absolutely worth it. Because although being public is hard, no matter where you are, much better to be public on a recognized exchange than it is on the smaller over-the-counter markets.
So what's some of the key things that you've used over the years as you're deciding who to put on, deciding who to bring onto the team?
Oh, that's hard. I would say my number one thing is enthusiasm. So, we just hired a new research scientist and we interviewed a lot of super well-qualified people. Mm-hmm. Some of the attitudes, you know, I don't know. I don't really want to work with you. But other people who are super enthusiastic, they want the job. The job means something to them. So if you are interviewing for a position, you know, if you walk into my office with a bunch of attitude, like I am the shit and you need me, you just don't know it yet. I'll be like, okay. I'm willing to listen, but I'm telling you right now, you're starting on the wrong side of the field.
Right.
You got a lot of ground to make up. I want to work with people who want to be there. Number one, I assume, you know, you go out, Julian, you go buy a car. you know, used car, new car, you assume it has four wheels. Mm-hmm. You assume it has a steering wheel and an engine that works, right? There are basic assumptions you're going to make about buying that car. So when people come and work with us and we're building the team, I assume they're going to be qualified. Now, if I find out they're not, they're missing a steering wheel, well, you know, we're done. It's over. So assuming everybody that I'm speaking with is qualified, I would say enthusiasm is number one. And then it's going to be that binary thing that you asked me about earlier, mm-hmm. whether it's like formal training and intellectual smarts or horsepower or creativity. Do you have one of those in excess? Mm. Are you, you know, I'm only looking for somebody with a bachelor's degree, but you've got a PhD. So you've clearly got some intellectual training that's more than I need. That's a positive. Or are you super creative? Do you have patents behind you? Do you do creative writing? Do you write music? I want to see how people are able to take the same data inputs. You know, the internet is available to all of us, right? Mm-hmm. We all have access to the exact same information, more or less. What do you do with it? How do you process it? What makes you different, better, faster, unique? So enthusiasm and that unique capability of processing, I think for me, those are the key characteristics. And I'll tell you a funny story. My president, John, he's one of my best friends now. We've been working together about 6 years, John Doherty. He called me up fairly soon after we acquired the early stage technology. And we were putting out a couple of press releases, nothing too major, but you know, it was early days. Mm-hmm. And I was admittedly over my head. I don't have that science background. Now, my venture capital network did. And that's who I use to vet whether the tech was any good or not. But then John called me one day, complete stranger, introduced himself. And he says to me, I said, well, why are you calling? He says, I want to ask you a question. I said, okay, shoot. He says, I want to know if you understand what you've got here in this technology. And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, do you understand the potential for it? And I said, well, yeah, I'm the one who made the decision to acquire it. I think I do understand it. His response to me, with respect, I don't think you do. And I'm like, okay, this is intriguing. And John is very creative scientist. And he went on to, you know, educate me on the way the body absorbs and the intestinal barriers and bile and the pancreas and gallbladder and the way the whole thing works. And by the time the call ended, he was right. I had underestimated the power of the technology. He knew it from his background. And by the end of the call, he said, well, by the way, if you'd like to hire me, I'm available. Being our president.
I like that.
Yeah, it was funny as hell.
Yeah, I like that. And so that's a great way, you know, to get hired, you know, just for yep. anyone to take some lessons out of something like that.
Yeah, he demonstrated his superior knowledge mm-hmm. and his enthusiasm by making a call, even though we weren't advertising a position. And before you knew it, he was the president of the company.
I'm curious, what's the future hold for where do you look at things in 12-month cycles, 6-month cycles? I guess how are you looking at kind of the next stepping stones?
Yeah, we're pretty small, you know, so there's less than 20 people in the company. So because of that, our cycles are pretty short. Mm-hmm. Our typical animal study, for example, will take 3 months. from the time that it's in your brain to the time you get the study design written down, approved by whoever needs to approve it, engage the third-party lab, and complete the work. The human studies are 6 to 12 month projects in comparison. But, you know, I've lost track. I think we've completed maybe 8 or 10 studies already in 2021. So because we do so much work and because we're always exploring and kind of testing the boundaries, how far can we push the tech? Can we achieve this? Well, we achieved this over here. So if we modify it a bit, will it get even better? So we're doing that all the time. And because our company is science-based, we live and breathe by the results. So if the results come back and we investigate one particular drug or one particular formulation and the results come back and they're mediocre, we're like, yeah, okay, we're not going to go down that path. We were hopeful we were going to, but no, it didn't work, so we're not. On the other hand, when we were testing antiviral drugs, I think we've tested somewhere between 5 and 8, including remdesivir. Colchicine is another one that we've had great success with. When we test some of these drugs, some of them will come back and they'll give us, a 40% improvement in delivery, which is not bad. Well, but then the next drug comes along and gives us a 200% improvement. And we're like, well, okay, this is a game changer over here. So we need to focus on that. So based on the results that we're getting on antiviral drugs, oral nicotines, another big one, the cannabinoids again, we follow those paths. So people around me are always kind of teasing me because they say, well, can I have your business plan? And I'm like, nope. Well, why not? Don't you have one? No, not really. How can you not have a business plan? Because our business plan changes every 3 or 4 months. Based on what we're discovering. Once we go through, a pot of 100 drugs and we've prioritized, well, what are our top 10 out of that 100? Then we'll be able to make a more kind of longer term development plan. But I will say this, three areas that we're focused on this year: antiviral drugs. We've been doing a lot of work. We're not doing a lot this week and this month, but we have earlier this year. Oral nicotine has been a big deal to us. Not because we want people to use nicotine if they don't already use it. That is not what we're after. We're trying to save lives. You know, there's over 1 billion people who smoke. Let's face it. The FDA, the pharmaceutical companies, the tobacco companies, they've shit the bed. Right? I mean, they just have. Got 8 million people a year dying from cigarettes. That's not okay. It's like 4 times worse than COVID. It's not okay. And they go through all this, this bullshit regulatory process doesn't work. People are not getting satisfaction and they keep smoking. That's why vaping became such a big deal when Juul popularized a particular formulation. What we're saying is, well, look, if you're going to use it anyways, the debate shouldn't be this big moral debate about people who smoke are evil or people who smoke are worth less. That's bullshit, right? That's just not fair. And what we say is, look, there's a social addiction. There's a behavioral addiction and there's a chemical addiction if you are a smoker. Let us solve one of those problems at a time, which would be the chemical addiction. So we can give you nicotine in an oral form factor. You will not get emphysema. You will not get lung cancer or throat cancer. Isn't that a good start? Like, can't we just start there? And that's what we would like to do. And in fact, the FDA did rule a couple of years ago that there's a new product format called a white pouch. It's a silly little pouch. It's about the size of a man's thumbnail. And they fill it with powders, nicotine powder, flavors and sugars and stuff. And you kind of suck on it in your mouth rather than smoke a cigarette. And the FDA actually, for the first time in its history in 50 years, issued a reduced risk notice saying that this, if you use this product instead of smoking, you are at reduced risk of these forms of cancer, emphysema, and so on and so forth. So that is something that our technology is really good at delivering. And we would like to be able to help people have another choice beyond vaping and smoking for a form of nicotine that acts fast and delivers a high enough level into blood and brain tissue. And, you know, we talked about bioavailability, right? But the other thing that our tech is really famous for is rapidity. It is so fast, you just can't believe it. We've been doing human clinicals as well as animal studies. And in all of our studies, human or animal-based, we just did a dog study. No dogs were harmed in our study. Every dog was well taken care of, just so you know. But in that dog study, they literally would open up the cheek of the dog and put one of these little pouches in between the jowl. And we're monitoring their blood. And within 2 minutes of doing that, they're getting nicotine in blood. 2 minutes. Right. Wow. So this idea that you can deliver on consumer satisfaction, right? People are going to go where they want to go on the internet. People are going to use the products they want to use. If they want to use nicotine, let's give them a safe alternative that's not going to kill them. I think that's a pretty simple thing to do. The regulators don't always agree. They make it hard as hell, but that's an area of focus, the antivirals. And then for us this year, Julian, the other big focus, and this will continue in the months to come. And I hope, you know, this is my job at the end of the day. I'm supposed to make money for my shareholders. Mm-hmm. Increased value is the term. but CBD for hypertension. Mm-hmm. So we're one of the global pioneers in clinical research on cannabidiol. And I am here to tell you, if you use cannabidiol, if it is in a coconut oil base, and about 80% of the products out there are, mm-hmm. throw it out. Just throw it out. I'm telling you, we've done these tests so many times. 100% of the time, I can tell you that the fraction of CBD that makes its way from what is on the label, mm-hmm. into your bloodstream, if it's in a coconut oil base, the fraction that makes it into the bloodstream is less than 5%. It's wow. often as little as 1%. You think you're taking 20 milligrams? You might be getting one if you're lucky. If you're lucky. And in our latest human clinical study, peer review, double-blinded, placebo-controlled, IRB, independent review board approved, you know, gold standard of clinical tests, we used generic CBD and then we used a Hydrotech processed CBD. And the generic CBD has little or no effect on blood pressure, for example, in human beings. The Hydrotech processed, same CBD, same batch, same strength, but processed with our tech, delivered up to a 23% reduction in blood pressure. 23%, that's huge. So you want to talk about having efficacy. It's not enough to fool or trick the consumer into buying your product with a pretty label or a pretty advertisement. Does the damn thing even work? Well, in our case, Dehydratec processed CBD has been clinically proven to lower blood pressure and several other things. Now, we don't make any health claims. We do not actually sell any CBD products because we're a B2B company. We sell technology. We don't actually sell products. And you cannot make those health claims in the United States unless you're registered with the FDA as a drug.
It's true.
Right? And you know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I am well versed in that. Yeah. I use different words and everything just because it's very particular about making certain claims and everything. And so definitely get that. And, you know, speaking of health and everything, a good way to kind of, as we wrap this up is, what are some of your personal wellness habits that keeps you sharp and everything?
I definitely use our technology in, mm-hmm. in homemade Dehydratec processed CBD. And it helps a lot. I'm a long distance cyclist when the weather permits. And I can tell you that my performance in, say, the same annual race, I've done the same annual race once a year for 8 or 9 years. When I use CBD, my performance is way enhanced. I do notice the anxiety reduction in CBD and so on. But beyond that, you know, I'm 60 years old. I turned 60 this year. I hate it. Mentally, I like to think I'm like 30. But I work out a lot. I work out at least several times a week. I keep my my weight down. I used to be about 40 pounds heavier, 30 to 40 pounds heavier. I was kind of in the 215 range. I dropped that weight because that wasn't good for me. I recreate not enough. You know, I should recreate more. Everybody around me knows that I should. I know it. So I probably work too much. But I think diet, super important. I'm an incredibly healthy eater, keep my weight down. Other than the legal drugs, cannabis is legal in Canada. I don't use any drugs and take care of my body. Get plenty of sleep. I will tell you, I had a time in my life when I wasn't sleeping at all. I had some health issues. I still have some health issues. But if you're not getting 6 hours a night, you need to fix that. And you need to take it. It might be like number 12 on your priority list. You need to make it number one or two, because everything else you're doing is going to go to crap if you're not getting enough sleep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that's super, super important. So all those normal things, fitness, activity, you need to be interested in something, right? You need to have a reason to get out of bed in the morning, whether that's, you know, people you love and who love you and give you that reason to get going, whether it's a job you love, whether it's a 10-mile jog that you want to do that day. Make sure there's something you're doing in your life that you just plain enjoy. Because if it's all work and if you hate it all, that's not going to lead to mental or physical health over a period of time. So I think that kind of synergistic life, healthy living, good diet, stay active. I mean, there's just no reason. I mean, I know a lot of people are overweight. Work on that. Come on, you can do it. We can all do it. It doesn't have to be big, just little things that drop that weight, that all of a sudden you don't need the hip replacement. You don't have gout. You don't have kidney and liver issues. One of my best friends, in fact, somebody who saved my life once, happens to be, he's retired now, but he was the head of the ICU at the local hospital. So he saw a lot. And, you know, I've known this person for 20 years. He's a great, great friend. And he's told me flat out, he said, you know, Chris, 80% of the people that come into ICU wouldn't be there except for two things, overweight and drug overdose. That's it. 80% of the ICU, now that was pre-COVID, 80% of the ICU would not be there if it wasn't for too many drugs or just too much weight. So you can control that. So do it. Don't find excuses. Don't look for acceptance. Do it. Fix it. You can do it. We can all do it. And I would say that's really, really important.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. That's awesome to hear. I wouldn't have guessed that you were 60. So you might be chronologically 60, but biologically, you know, I guarantee if you did one of the age testings, I would bet that you are much younger than 60.
I would love to do that actually.
So I would be willing to bet, but so it's good to also sleep is a huge thing. So huge. And so, we all have those stages where we try to out, sleep 4 hours and go back. So, but this has been an awesome conversation. I really enjoyed this. And where can listeners learn more about Lexaria?
Probably our website, Lexaria Bioscience. Lexaria is LEXARIA, lexariabioscience.com. Lots of information there. Or I suppose if you have any of the, you know, investment platforms, just type in our trading symbol, LEXX, And then all of our press releases and links back to our website would be there as well. Lots of information out there about us, that's for sure.
Sounds good. And I will include a handful of this in the show notes for you all to check out. And until next time, listeners, stay awesome, be limitless. And as always, go be superhuman. Peace.